This is North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Phoebe Judge. At one time, North Carolina had more Ku Klux Klan members than all the other southern states combined, even though North Carolina was seen as more racially progressive than others in the South. The new documentary, Klansville USA, explores those very questions. Callie Weiser is the film's director, and she joins me now. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Why was the Klan so successful here?
The Klan was successful in North Carolina. I think there are a number of reasons. One of them is that in North Carolina, the leadership of North Carolina was less willing to stand for maintenance of segregation. And there were a lot of people in the South and in the nation who felt like that, or specifically in the South, that felt like segregation was the natural order of things. That was the way they had grown up. That was the way that order was maintained. They couldn't imagine a world outside of that. And so you had in Alabama, George Wallace's saying segregation now, segregation forever. And so those people could have voted for George Wallace. They could have voted for him and made their voice heard and felt like they were being represented. In North Carolina, there wasn't anybody who was speaking that populist voice, who was speaking for those people who felt like segregation was very important to the maintenance of their lifestyle. And so they were drawn to the Klan. And I think the other reason is that in North Carolina, the Klan was a little bit different. And the North Carolina Klan did not have the spectacular violence that the Klan had in the Deep South. And so I think there were a lot of people who were able to join the Klan and ignore that portion of it. That wasn't a part of their experience in the Klan. And some people would say that's disingenuous, but a lot of people felt like they were joining this thing. They were part of something. They were the treasurer in the group. They had never been allowed to be in the Rotary Club, but here they were the treasurer of the Klan. They were with their buddies. They were, being somebody. And the violence to them wasn't important. I'm sure there were people who wanted to do violence, but the majority of people who joined in North Carolina weren't people who joined in order to have an excuse to do violence towards African Americans.
And Bob Jones, who was running the Klan in the state, was very aware that having an organization that was less violent could potentially make their impact greater.
Yes, he seemed to grasp that the violence could be their downfall. And also a lot of people we spoke to said that he himself, though he carried a gun all the time, he himself was not somebody, he could talk about violence, but that he wasn't somebody who was prone to violence.
And how did the Klan grow its presence throughout the state? Because this wasn't just, there weren't just bastions of these Klan organizations in Charlotte or Raleigh. There were also small little chapters all over in little tiny towns.
There were, and I think that some people said to us, if you look back at that time period, one guy in Granite Quarry said there was nowhere to go. You didn't go out at night for dinner. There were no bars to go to hang out. What did people do? People had groups that they were a part of, and these people were in a social class that they were not part of the elite groups. They were not part of those groups, and so people wanted to be part of something. They saw their world slipping away, and they wanted to be part of something, and the power of that is very strong. Gangs are the same general idea. People want to be a part of something and they want to feel important. And if no one else is giving them that, then they're going to try and find it on their own.
How visible was the Klan's presence throughout the state? Of course, there were gatherings and meetings and cross burnings, but that wasn't just it. Bob Jones also tried to make their presence visible just on the downtown streets.
He did, and I think that anybody who lived in North Carolina in the 1960s and 70s, if you mention the Klan to them, they always mention the sign, the billboard in Smithfield on the way from Raleigh to the beach. They talk about this huge billboard. They had billboards, they had, I think, more than a handful of huge billboards across the state that would say, join the Klan, be a man, join the Klan, or the Klan, fight communism. They were very visible, and they wanted to be seen as human beings. There was an anti-masking law in North Carolina, but there was also the sense that Bob Jones wanted people to know that he was a normal person. He wasn't crazy. He wasn't out there. He wanted people to see him, not see this group, and that he wanted to see that these are individuals who feel this way, not that, these are people who you'll never know, you'll never see on the street. These are people who you do business with, who feel this way, and therefore we need to be listened to.
They were sponsoring things like radio programs, bluegrass radio programs and such.
They were. They had a bluegrass program that they did weekly, and it would come out of Bob Jones' garage. It would be music. They'd had their own band. The band played at the rallies they held. And they also did things, they had a women's auxiliary. Which we didn't get to get into in the film, but it's a really important part of the Klan. You know, they had a women's group, and the women who I talked to who had been in it said, you know, it was like my church group is now. We would get together and talk about the needs of the community. We would make cookie baskets and send them to the hospital. And she said, you know, it sounds crazy, but that's what it was for so many people. And, you know, she said it's hard to ignore the other part of it, but at the time it didn't feel like we were part of something that was nefarious.
So the Klan continues to grow throughout the 60s. And then what happens? What happens that starts to bring down the Klan's presence again?
You know, I think in this case, the Klan's violence was, in the end, their undoing. The fact that television had been invented, and television brought these horrific violent acts in Mississippi and in Alabama into people's living rooms. And people all of a sudden had this sense that, you know what, these people who we didn't, you know, there was a sense they weren't harming anybody in getting together and saying racist things. You know, there's nothing illegal about having a Klan rally. But there was a sense that actually this could tip at some point and these awful things can come of this. And I think that that realization and the combination of the violence in other states and the fact they went before the House Un-American Activities Committee, they were actually called un-American. And I think that was something that people saw as something that was reserved for communists. And all of a sudden to have the Klan there and have their, you know, what was their financial gain they were making from these things made people realize that it may not just be a group that you could be a part of just to represent you. It had something, the leaders were not only profiting from it, but also there was a side that you could be in trouble for.
And so it just quietly disappears?
In North Carolina, it did mostly quietly disappear. I mean, there's a moment in North Carolina where there is a split, and the people of the Klansmen of North Carolina realize they want more action. People get out who are in the middle when the violence happens, but then there are other people who say violence is the only answer. So Bob Jones is sort of torn in the middle, where he's losing all of his, quote, moderate members, and his other members are saying, well, you know, it seems like the only thing to do is action because we're losing. You know, we've lost. The Voting Rights Act has been signed. You know, we've lost all these things, and so we've got to do what we have said we're going to do all along. And when he refuses to do that, there's a moment when he refuses to do that after he's been at HUAC, and the Klan starts factionalizing. And it breaks into very small groups, and they're all run by different Grand Dragons, and they never have the appeal that they had when Bob Jones was the leader.
Well, thank you very much for speaking with me.
You're welcome.
Callie Weiser is the director of the documentary Klansville USA, which will premiere on PBS stations on January 13th. We'll have more information on our website, wunc.org. I'm Phoebe Judge, and this is North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC.